Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Welcome once again to the Wonder of Parenting podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. My name is Tim Wright. I am the host, I guess, of this show, along with Dr. Michael Gurian. Michael, welcome to the Wonder of Parenting podcast, as always.
Thank you. Thank you.
We have been talking for several weeks in and out of our podcast about COVID-19. And there are obvious reasons for that. We're all thinking about it. It's impacted so much of life. But Michael and I were having a discussion a couple weeks ago, and he had said something to me. I thought, boy, this would make an interesting discussion. One of the things that we've noticed, Michael, is that men are dying at higher rates than women from COVID-19. And we're going to talk about some of the reasons for that. But the reason why we're talking about this in the podcast is because you made the comment to me that this is further proof that the Y chromosome is, or the male, tends to be more vulnerable. And we don't think about males or boys or men being vulnerable. So I thought this would be a great opportunity for us to talk about what that means from a science perspective. And maybe some things that we can do to help our sons build resilience and so on, even though they've got this Y chromosome going on. So let's start, first of all, with a little bit of a summary of what's happening with COVID-19, and then we'll talk about the vulnerability of boys. I'll get you there, and then we'll talk about some strategies.
Yeah, so first, the stats. Some folks may not know that at this point right now, two-thirds of the deaths worldwide from COVID have been males and one-third females. I believe when all the data, when we look back on the data, you know, as we start figuring out all the people who really had COVID and died from it, who haven't been counted yet, and then all the people who are being counted as COVID deaths that actually may not be COVID, they died from something else, you know, there's going to be a lot of number crunching over the next number of months. And I think it's going to end up at about 60-40, 60% male, 40% female. But right now, the number is two-thirds males dying and one-third females. And also around two-thirds of the jobs lost right now in the recession, that is, may turn into depression here, or it looks like it will be turning into a depression soon. Two-thirds of the jobs lost are male. Now, some of those jobs are going to come back as construction starts back up.
Right.
But that's still, you know, and we talk in the sciences, we talk about the fragile Y, as in the letter Y, because obviously we're talking about the Y chromosome. And why is it fragile? So for instance, why is it that even in terms of infant mortality, more males die than females? And then all the way through, you know, birth to 10, then the teen years, 20s, 30s, all the way through. And then as everyone knows, all the way through to older age where more males died than females younger. Why is that? Well, the Y chromosome itself appears to be fragile. And all of us males have Y in us. So it's in all our cells. It's in our blood. It's a part of who we are. And there appears to be a fragility to it and a contrasting strength to the X, to the female chromosome, And when we look at it from an evolutionary standpoint, we think we understand why, which is, I know where you're going to take me in a moment. From the point of view of like COVID or the point of view of disease, there are some diseases that more females get than males and some lethal diseases that more females get than males. So absolutely, this is not an across-the-board thing. But at the same time, males tend to die younger from those same diseases. And males also do it to themselves. So, you know, the majority of suicides, around between 70 and 80% of suicides, males commit. Females commit a very small number of suicides in comparison. Males also are more likely to get in wrecks. They're more likely to, and so die in a car crash or something like that. They're more likely to take the dangerous jobs. And so they are more likely to die in the workplace. Around 90% of workplace deaths are male deaths. Around 10% are female. So so not only are males putting themselves in positions of vulnerability as part of their drive, let's say, as part of the why, but they also are more fragile than we realize. And so when they get the same disease, with particular diseases, they're more likely to die, like COVID.
So I thought I heard, and this may not be correct, we hear so many things now in the news about COVID. I thought I heard that more women than men get COVID, but more men than women die from it. Does that sound correct to you?
I have not heard that.
Okay.
I'll have to go find that. I had not heard that, no.
All right. So let's not quote me on that. But let's assume, though, that—
We don't know. Can I just say that we can't answer that question right now because our testing is so minimal.
Right.
In the U.S. alone, tens of millions of people have had or have COVID, but don't know it and didn't know it. So we're going to be able to answer that one, but we're going to have to answer it probably 6 months from now when we actually do enough testing to know.
Right. But the point is that more men than women are dying from it that we know of, at least statistically. And it's the numbers are so big that we can be pretty confident of that.
Yeah,
but there are people who would say, all right, but maybe that's because men are, like you say, they're reckless with their health. They smoke more. They drink more. Why are we saying it's the why is vulnerable? Isn't it just that men are making bad decisions about their lives?
Right. Well, we got to remember that it all starts. Everything is nature-based. Everything starts in nature. And when we later impose the concept of that man made that choice and that woman made that choice, they're great concepts to impose, absolutely, as part of how we run a society. But the drive to do something, like the drive to go to the top of a 70-foot skyscraper and weld up there, which has a high mortality rate, the drive to do that in part comes from the why and the testosterone that the why is triggering in us. So that, yeah, the guy chose that, but the drive was inside him and that was needed by the society, right? We had to build that building. So someone had to do it. And most women are not going to do that. And we'll talk, I think, in a moment about frontal lobe and the way the frontal lobe works and why women tend not to do those things. And that's the stronger X that creates a different connectivity to the frontal lobe so that I'll go into it right now. Tell me if I should wait or if I should go into it right now.
You do it right now.
Yep. Okay. So, you know, female have X, XX, males are XY. Of course, there's all sorts of other things involved, very complicated. But in terms of pursuing this thread, that we know from brain scans of fetuses, which have become available to us as of April 2019, and I show them everywhere I go, and now I'm doing a lot via Zoom, a lot of talks and lectures and keynotes and so on via Zoom. I'm showing them in Zoom. People are blown away to see that now, thanks to these scientists all over the world who are looking at the brain inside the womb, they're able to see that already in utero, by 8 months, the female brain has already developed substantial connectivity between the bottom of the brain or the midbrain where impulses and drives are happening and the top of the brain, the frontal and prefrontal, those pathways are already being laid out. They're not filled up with synapses yet, but they're already being laid out. And the frontal is what makes the executive decision making, which is don't go on top of that building. You're going to fall and die, right? So already that's happening in utero. That goes all through life. The males don't have as much of that connectivity in general, in the aggregate, as females do. And yes, there are exceptions among females as well. So yeah, he's making the choice, just like he made the choice to join the infantry and fight in World War II. We could call that reckless, or we could say, but that is how that brain is set up. So here's an area where the choice making would then make more sense. So more males than females binge drink, and they binge drink, they get in cars, they drive, they get in a wreck. That is definitely a bad choice, right? Absolutely. At the same time, the why is part of that. The why is setting up a brain that does not connect as well to the frontal lobe, so that the frontal lobe can say, if you binge drink and get in that car, you're going to get in a wreck. Don't do it. So when I hear people say that, I want to agree with them that yes, males make those choices, but they need to go further back, go deeper down to see why we have these differences between males and females. And those differences, part of it starts in this fragile why.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
So let's talk a little bit about the why itself. So now I'm starting to ask questions where I'm way out of my league. What is it that the why does that makes a male more fragile? Or what is it about the why itself that is fragile? Is that a fair question to ask?
Yeah, I'm going to go both and.
Okay.
So the chromosome itself, it is a fragile chromosome in the sense that there can be a lot of ragged edges there, and all the markers that associate with it, you know, can have a lot of ragged edges, a lot of fragility, and they can impact the other chromosomes, so that the child is born. Why do we have, you know, why are 75% of our learning disordered kids worldwide, why are they male? That's that fragility. That's those ragged edges. That then connect with other chromosomes as that child, you know, is conceived and born. And then you see, oh wow, look at these various brain disorders from this child. This child is male, and far more males than females get that. And you know, what is the thing they have in common? What they have in common is the why. So that answers that piece, I think. And then the other thing is the testosterone. So the Y makes us male, right? And of course, a lot of that means it sets us up for a different wash of testosterone. Our whole hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis, which is the axis from where testosterone is in gonads, you know, up to brain and so on, that controls everything. That is obviously different than for females. They're X-driven. So, and ovaries, so more estrogen, oxytocin, et cetera, males more testosterone. And testosterone itself creates more aggression, which again allows the guys to go up into the skyscrapers and fight the wars as infantry. And also that aggression, you know, obviously can become violence and can become dangerous. So the testosterone is part of the vulnerability, and it all came, you know, it all came back to the why. Did I answer those two questions?
Yeah. So if I'm tracking here, a part of what makes a male, the Y chromosome or male, vulnerable is that it can lead to riskier behavior, more aggressive behavior. Does it also mean then that the male is more susceptible to certain diseases and a certain a shorter lifespan? Or does that have to do with life decisions as well, or is it both and?
Yeah, it's everything's both and here. It all starts in nature, so one could answer, if one is being really legalistic, I guess, I could say, actually, everything starts with the why, you know. But the public discussion separates chromosomes and hormone flow and the setup of the brain. We tend to separate that from action. So we tend to say things like, well, the reason they die is because they did these, as you said, reckless actions. That's why they die. And that's separate from who they are, right, as males. Now, I don't make that separation, but I understand it. I understand why people make it. And so it's a both and. But in terms of diseases, you know, some diseases like Alzheimer's, for instance, okay, that actually hits more females than males,
okay,
right? So we always want to be honest and say, look, there are certain diseases hit more females than males. But then you have diseases that hit more males, obviously prostate cancer is an example, and then all these brain disorders. And that's where the why, I would say, we have even more hidden, we can get even more hidden insight into the why. If we take the death rates out for a moment, yes, males die more and they die younger, yes. And by the, oh, in parentheses, this was not true until medicine allowed us to save so many women during childbirth.
Okay.
That's an external factor that localizes our conversation to the last 100 years, because 120 years, because previous to us being able to gradually save so many women, right, during childbirth, we were losing a lot of women to childbirth and all over the world. And so the numbers weren't quite as stark in terms of more males dying, right? You'd have more males would die in wars, but you'd have more females die in childbirth. But once we solved that, we now start seeing, and we have for 100 years, we start seeing this difference in terms of death rates. But if we take those death rates out so that we don't even have to have the argument about why are they dying because they chose that, and we still see it in brain disorders. So many more males get so many more brain disorders than females. And so, you know, I think that's a way, that's not a choice the male makes. You are born with those chromosome markers, and those markers express themselves, are triggered during life, express themselves. And, you know, therefore, we have so many more males who abuse substances than females. We have so many more males who have dyslexia, so many more males with autism. You know, obviously, the list is very long. That's coming from the from nature. That's coming from Y chromosome, and then how that self is formed chromosomally in utero.
So I'm thinking now about parents raising sons, educators working with boys. With this little information we have about them being vulnerable in these areas, and I'm going to ask you to just kind of give us what are some things that we can do to compensate for that or build resilience in our boys. But we're going to be doing a one-day seminar on this coming up in the fall, early October. And why don't you chat a little bit about that and tell people where they can learn more about it?
Yeah, helpingboysthrive.org. That website, you immediately see our telesummit. And Tim actually had this idea and has been a huge support of this. We are going to do the actual summit itself so that people can ask us questions via chat and so on. We're going to do that, give our talks and interact. We're going to do that on October. I just lost it. October 1 or October?
Yes, I think it's October 1st.
Mm-hmm. Thursday, October 1st. Yes, I had a brain glitch. Fragile brain. So we're going to do it on that day. But then for the next week, people who registered are going to be able to, you know, re-listen and ask questions, et cetera. So it's like a one-week telesummit, but we're going to be doing it you know, doing the actual live events that day. And it's going to focus, it's a Helping Boys Thrive Summit. It's going to focus on boys, how to help boys, educating boys, forging boys of spirit, rites of passage for boys. You know, I'll certainly talk a lot about the brain, male brain, male raising males, you know. So it's going to be a really powerful event that we're going to do as a telesummit this time, just because we don't know what things are going to be like in the fall in terms of large gatherings. So we're doing it as a telesummit. And both Tim and I have been doing a lot via Zoom and telehealth, and it can work quite well. So go to helpingboysthrive.org and you can register there.
So you've got, you're raising a son, you're educating boys, and they've got these propensities, these vulnerabilities for risk-taking, for other things. What are some strategies that we can use in raising our sons then to compensate for some of this fragility?
Okay, well, that, of course, is a huge question, of which dozens of books have been written. Let me just pull out a few, just to tease out a few, and then focus me on something specific if you want. Let me tease out the whole frontal lobe thing. So some boys are self-correctors. So this is not going to, you know, they have really nice pathway development to frontal. But some boys, you can tell very, very early, are serious risk takers. And our strategy is going to be by strategic parenting, and just to generally hit them with two different strategies. One strategy is, and I'm going to use by strategic parenting here, which is the parents parent differently. Which is natural and good. So one parent is going to be saying, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. Here are the consequences of doing that, don't do that. And that's fine. That's going to help him develop that connectivity to the frontal, where he's going to make better executive decisions later. The other parent is going to be saying, yeah, great, push harder, do more of that. Obviously, if not that the child's in danger. I mean, no one's going to put the child in danger, but yeah, go ahead. Let's see. So right now you've jumped off that chair into the pool, and I see that you want to jump off that ledge into the pool. Yeah, that's safe. Go ahead. And that parent, while ensuring safety, is pushing the risk-taking. Because what we want with our boys is we want both the carefulness, the executive decision-making, and we also want the risk-taking. We want them to take risks because later in life, they're going to succeed by taking risks. And by the way, I have two daughters and I was this way with them. I want them to take risks too. So I think that would be one set of strategies that everyone can use, which is be by strategic and have one helping with risk-taking, even though the other is trying to develop more care. The carefulness. A second thing I would focus on is social-emotional. And let me say two things about social-emotional. Part of the vulnerability for males and for the Y and the male brain is social-emotional. We don't track as much, especially in words, as many emotions in words as females in general do. Some males are exception to this, but generally we don't. And parents are always trying to figure out strategically, how do I get my boy to process more feeling, to talk more about his feelings? So I'm going to say two things about that. One is, it's okay for boys to kind of armor up when they're faced with, a feeling that's scaring them. And usually it's a feeling they can't process as quickly as the person asking them about it, like their mom. Their brains are just not set up like hers are to process that feeling right now. And so one thing we need to do is we need to just kind of point it out, let them armor up. You know, point it out and say, hey, I feel like you, like someone did something to you today because you seem sad. And then he armors up and he says, no, everything's fine. And then we let him have the delayed reaction. We come back to him in 6 hours or in 12 hours, you know, whatever we know works for him because we know our child. We come back to him later, bring it back up again, and don't shame the armoring. The armoring is part of who he is. It's okay. It's going to make him successful in life, but we're going to bring him back to it gradually and be empathic and gradually get him to talk about it if he needs to talk about it. If he has processed it in the 6 to 12 hours and does not need to talk about it, we're going to know that because he's going to go, Oh yeah. Well, you know, I called him and we worked it out. Or, it felt bad at the time, but truthfully, I don't really care now. So we're going to see that he has worked it out. But if he's defensive, or if we can tell he's sad, then we're going to keep coming back at him and we're going to finally get him to open up. We will. It'll just be by allowing him to delay his reaction and then so on. And then in terms of just at another strategy level, if you're trying to get a guy to talk about feelings, in other words, to develop the social emotional stuff we want, avoid if possible having him sit down right in front of you and look you in the eye. Better would be to walk around with him, go do an errand with him, go do some work with him, play ball with him, do some action where you can be sort of parallel, shoulder to shoulder, not eye to eye. Tell me what you're feeling right now. That one generally is less good with males. It can work better with females, but less good with males.
And I know that you've written a lot about this in your book, Saving Our Sons. In terms of, you know, molding and shaping our boys, helping them make good, wise decisions. And you've talked about surrounding them not with just by strategic parenting, but other people in the community, diet. Mm-hmm. All of these things are really important in terms of helping boys learn to manage being boys and having that Y chromosome.
Yeah, remember, they're always trying to manage their own vulnerability. I mean, every human child is. Every human child feels vulnerability in different situations and has to learn self-regulation, self-management, and develop a self by which that child becomes an adult who independently manages their own vulnerability. Managing vulnerability is a crucial, like, minute by minute or hourly or daily part of human life. And every adult knows what that feels like, because we as adults can constantly feel vulnerable. And this time of COVID right now is an example of that. People are managing vulnerability hour by hour. And you know, they can manage that vulnerability differently. And we do need to accept that males in general manage their vulnerability somewhat differently than females. And if we accept that, we then can work our way back to saying, okay, who is this male? How does he manage vulnerability at 5, at 10, at 15, at 40? How do I work with the way he manages it? And as I learn who he is and understand him as a person, but also as a male and a male emotional self, you know, I instinctively will start providing strategies for him that work. And when I've come to the end of what I can provide, it's so true what you're saying. We've got to reach out to, as parents, to coaches, to extended family, to faith community role models, to other role models, because a boy, you know, part of his fragility and part of who he is that he, at a certain age, the way that I manage him may not actually help him a lot. He may need other people, or I'm helping him at a kind of baseline as a mom or a dad, but he may need other people to help him too as he gets older. And that is okay.
One of the things that I always enjoy when we're together doing these Helping Boys Thrive things is you say if there are approximately 3.5 billion males on this planet, there are 3.5 billion ways of being male. And so, you know, it's not just being male. There are certain general qualities that fit most guys. That's what we're talking about. But what you said is so important. It's getting to know the male in my home, getting to know my son, getting to understand my husband, and recognizing that there's male there, there's the nature base there, but there's also my particular guy who's expressing his masculinity in a certain way that I need to know and respond to.
Yeah, absolutely. And that who that male is in adolescence can change, you know, from what he was at 7 in terms of like this emotional stuff. A 7-year-old, you can have a 7-year-old, a male or 9-year-old male, who just talks a mile a minute about what he's feeling. You know, he'll just talk to us all the time, you know, yep. which is great. And hug that guy. That's great. And then you look back at when he's 17, you know, and you say, huh, wow, mm-hmm. he's, you know, this is a good guy. And, you know, but boy, he sure doesn't talk to me about what he feels like when he was seven. And so that who are my male is so important. And it's so important to adapt with him, you know, to shift with him. And as he develops, because he's a dynamic organism that is developing, he's a person and he's a male, dynamic male developing. So some things will actually also shift.
We encourage you to go to wonderofparenting.com. We have links to all kinds of things there for you and a link to our sponsor, the Center of Place of Hope up in the Seattle area. Encourage you to check them out. We have a Facebook page, just do a search of Wonder and Parenting, and you can join that. And we're going to be back with you next week, and we're getting back to our listener questions. We try to work through those as we can. Not always maybe as fast as you would hope, but we have a lot of questions we're working through. We've got a good one for you next week. Michael, thanks so much for your time once again.
Thank you, Tim. Great questions. Thanks for asking them.
You bet. And thank you, folks, for listening. Please tell your friends about the Wonder of Parenting podcast, and we'll be back with you next week.